Committee on Environment and Natural Resources for March 3rd. We have a very fishy agenda today. I have to get that out there. A lot of fish heads in the audience today. But first, I just want to thank there's a lot of our colleagues who came to talk about these bills. So we will start with Senate Bill 502, since we have a number of members that would like to testify on that. So that, I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 502. Gentlemen, you want to come up to the dais? I'm assuming you all want to testify. Yes, and Beth is going to give us an overview.
Senate Bill 502 requires that the State Department of Fish and Wildlife establish and develop a class of blue ribbon fisheries, requires that ODF&W identify two bodies of water to classify as blue ribbon fisheries by December 1st, 2010.
And I've been hearing about this for years, so now you have a chance to... I think it's the first bill I've seen on it, but I could be wrong.
Well, thank you,
Madam
Chair, colleagues, for the record, Frank Morse, State Senator representing the Albany-Corvallis area, but I'll tell you, I would be more comfortable today if I had my waders on and my fly fishing vest and fly rod, and I was headed off to go fishing.
I'm surprised you didn't all wear T-shirts that said, I'd rather be fishing than...
Madam Chair. We were thinking over on the other side. This was actually the components of the fishing caucus, the chair and the vice chair of the fishing caucus.
So we're going to name you.
Ms. Atkinson.
Yeah.
With that,
the president,
yeah.
The president of the club, Mr. or Madam Chair, would be Senator Atkinson, and he is supposed to be here.
Well, what?
That's nothing unusual. Sir.
Yeah, that's what happens. You're not here, you're out.
Well, this is his bill.
Okay, well.
But anyway, if you would indulge us today,
there's a problem with the projector media's working on right now.
This is our whole testimony. Well, pictures are worth thousands of words.
I know.
How about if I go? Why don't you go ahead, Senator?
They told us this morning.
Fred Gerard, Senate District 9. I think fish is one of the natural resources that we have that we're really not making much use of, and. As you know, I have several salmon bills, but this is a trout bill. And I think you'll find, as Frank will tell you, that the first thing you do is how many fish did you catch that day, and then after you've been fishing for a while, how big are they and the quality of the fish. This bill would set aside two lakes for trophy fish. And the one thing I want to testify on is the circle hooks. That is talked about in this bill. For you that don't fish, a circle hook, what it does is it hooks in the mouth. There's no way to hook deep. And I was not a believer of circle hooks. You look at those, you look at that, and there's no way that that's going to hook anything because it's tipped in.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to give testimony that last year I was down in Loretto exclusively using circle hooks. Caught and released 100 Dorado in 4 days, of which there were no fatalities in that. And the average fish was between 8 pounds and maybe 40. So, I mean, they're a very sturdy hook. They work really well. And this is kind of bringing circle hooks into where they should be, that for catch and release, that and barbless are a good way to go. Again, this is a great bill. Senator Morris over here is going to give you a lot better presentation than I will. I'm dodging committee, and I'm supposed to be there. So I just want to give my approval, and hopefully we can maybe fuse this and work on it and compromise and come up with there's a stream bill of Senator Bates's. Maybe we can put them both into one bill. That this the state has the resources for trophy fish and really good fishing. And by doing that, it really promotes tourism. And in my district, fishing, in my Senate district, I had 33,000 sportsmen. So that kind of gives you the numbers and how many people are out there wanting to hunt and fish. Thank you so much for letting me testify.
Madam Chair, I'm concerned that we may have a quorum of the fishing caucus. We have Senator Cruz just came in. If Atkinson walks in here,
Senator
we'll
Rudd said he's leaving to go back
waiting,
to his other committee. So,
yes.
So are you still trying to fix it?
While
still
we're
trying to
waiting,
fix it?
Madam Chair, to...
Senator Cruz, if you want to come up on your bill.
to get the PowerPoint up. I would like to just give a little bit of perspective on why this bill has brought forward.
I think that would be helpful, and maybe the difference for, I sense that there's several people up here who are not Fisher folks, so you may have to explain when he said this is not a salmon bill, this is a trout bill. I'm not. Do you know the difference between salmonids? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, one has pink skin and one has white, right?
When you go to Safeway, you start at the one end of the fish aquarium.
That's the endangered species.
Well, Madam Chair and colleagues, the reason that we're bringing this bill forward is to expand the opportunities for Oregon anglers to focus not just on catch rates, but on catch quality. Typically, and if you think about, maybe some of you know Hosmer Lake. That's a catch-and-release lake. It's fly fishing only. And when you think about quality fishing, generally you think about fly fishing only. And so it achieves somewhat of an elitist status. That is not the direction of this bill. What we would like to do is to create a minimum of two bodies of water, of lake bodies in this lake that would focus on quality fishing, not just quantity, but do not deny the opportunity for anglers that want to use bait. If they use bait, then use the circle hook, because the only way that hooks is in the outside of the mouth, so that you do have the ability to release a fish. If you fish with lures, fine. Fish with a single barbless hook. And if you fish with flies, fish with a single barbless hook. So you have the ability to release fish and minimize the mortality. So that's the intent, is to create an experience for all types of anglers and increase the sense of quality. When I started fishing with my dad and my grandpa, I learned very quickly how to put a worm on a hook, and that's the way we fish. My grandpa loved to fish with eggs, single eggs. We would still fish. And so that's the way I grew up. My preference today is fly fishing. I have great passion for fly fishing, but not everyone enjoys that. So this is not an elite bill that excludes opportunities for fishing for all types of anglers. I would like, Madam Chair, are we going to get this up, Ed?
Media's still working.
Well, you know what we could do if you'd like? Here he comes right now. We could take other testimony and then come back to you if you have time.
Okay, certainly.
Does it look like we're making progress here?
Getting someone from media here.
Okay.
It might be projector side.
Okay. Sorry about that, Senator. We're
IT challenged here. I would like to read a letter that was sent to us from the president and general manager of Diamond Lake Resort. And if I may just read this, because it makes a point that I'd like to address. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss Senate Bill 502. Needless to say, we would not support Diamond Lake becoming a blue ribbon fishery. Diamond Lake is a generational family fishery. Very young kids catch their first fish at Diamond Lake. They go catching, not just fishing. They eat what they catch and become the next generation of fishing families. Look at the campgrounds and lodge and marina. It is not an elite fishery. It is a family recreation area. Don't price them out or restrict their style of fishing. We are not opposed to giving ODF&W extra funding for large predator fish as long as it doesn't take away from their budget. Diamond Lake is one unique body of water that provides enough food to support this kind of fishery. The reasons that Diamond Lake should not become a blue ribbon fishery are too numerous to list. I have spent my life at Diamond Lake since 1956. I would like the opportunity in the future to testify, if necessary, to stop this bill if it has anything to do with Diamond Lake, or help coordinate families to testify. If you want to help Oregon fisheries fix Lamola Lake, we do support Bill 517, increasing penalties for personal transportation and planting fish in Oregon waters. And the reason that I wanted to make sure that this was shared before you is this is not an elite bill. It is not focused on Diamond Lake. That there's no predetermined determination as to where these bodies of water would be. It would be just a minimum of two. And for those lakes that are identified, they will not be elitist experiences, but focused on the opportunity to catch larger fish. So, Madam Chair, with that, if there's other testimony,
okay.
I
can you stay around for a little bit,
sure.
Senator? And we have another bill. Yeah, I wanted to see before you leave if there's questions, and then I know, does Senator Cruz, do you want to come up as well? But Susan Morgan's here on a different bill.
We have a couple of questions.
Yeah. You're not out of the hot seat yet.
Not out of the box
yet.
I just want to make a point of clarification so Senator Morris agrees with that. What we're talking about is stillwater fishing. We're talking about lakes.
That's right. My understanding.
Simply lakes. We're not talking about rivers and streams. We're talking about lakes.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, it says right in, it says identify at least two bodies of water. So I don't know if that is... was the intent.
Stillwater letter in there.
Yeah, so stillwater. So we're assuming unless there's, you know, the question is, do you have areas behind?
Well, Madam Chair, speaking of which, the Willamette goes still in many places.
I was going to say, areas behind dams that are more like lakes.
But in my district, it does.
Yeah, there's about, I can think of many pools and rivers like that. So, well, ODF&W will come up, and I'm sure we can ask them that question as well. But
Senator Morris? I had one question. I wanted to ask you about the circle hook. I'm not familiar with it, and what your description is, if I understood this, if it was a street hook, that would allow it to be set, and by having the tip of the hook curved, the hook can't actually set in the mouth or the side of the fish gill.
And I've not fished with circle hooks. We've done a lot of research in reading it and where they've actually been statistically tested. But if the circle hook is ingested, it does not hook until it comes out and slides across the outside of the mouth, and then it hooks. And that's why, Madam Chair, that's why you have low mortality with that kind of hook.
Okay.
Senator Atkinson,
I apologize.
I missed you.
I apologize.
Okay.
You're part of the fishing caucus, so that's just so you know.
It's called several things, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Morris is one of my favorite senators. And
you say that about everybody, though. We know that.
Not everybody. for the record, Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1. Diamond Lake is actually in Senator Prezansky's Senate District.
The entire lake?
Yes.
Yes. When I was in the House and had that district, I kept trying to get Crater Lake into it, but never could. I guess I just wanted to refresh the committee's memory of the struggles we have had to make Diamond Lake once again a premier fishery. It took us, when I came into this building in 97, we were trying to move to Rotenon the lake and get it cleaned up. Commissioner Morgan was heavily involved in those efforts over the decade it took us to do it. And it is now once again a premier family fishery. I don't have issues with what Senator Morris is doing, and I know he said it's not exclusive. I guess I have a real sensitivity to doing anything different at Diamond Lake than what we have spent all this time to try to create there. And I would be happy to support the bill if there was a provision in there that said any lake but Diamond Lake. I mean, quite honestly, it's a boon to our economy. Those folks up there have been hanging by a thread for a decade. They have their fishery back. Dan Gardner, you all remember him. He was served in the House, and actually he was in 97 one of the sponsors of the bill, Portland boy. And that was his favorite place to go in the state, was Diamond Lake to catch trout. And so it's not just a Douglas County issue. A lot of people come into Douglas County to fish there, and it is a place where people catch fish. And they keep fish, and there's plenty of them to do that with. And our economy is in tenuous enough shape as it is without doing anything that might restrict that fishery. So I don't have issues, Senator, with what you're wanting to do. Just leave my lake alone.
Do you gentlemen want to step outside and resolve this? So.
And I'm perfectly happy with that,
okay.
Madam Chair.
That's good to hear. Senator Atkinson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, bring the mic over so we can hear you. We're still having technical difficulties, is that correct?
For the record, Jason Atkinson, State Senator, Southern Oregon. I do want to come and support this bill and support my good colleague. Other parts of the world have done this very successfully. I can remember fishing for steelhead in British Columbia, and at the end of fishing, at the end of the year, because you have to buy a license, at the end of the year, receiving a comment card from their, it's not a department, it's a Ministry of Fish and something, asking me where we fished, whether or not I think it was a blue ribbon experience, and all these things that would critique not only the ministry or department, but also the quality of fish and the fish experience and all these things. And I'm sure the senator has added quite a bit to what an economic boom some of these designations could be. But also, it's actually good for the fishery, especially as you consider the catch and release element that is led in this bill. It is a huge driver. Last thing I'll say, and then get on to the slideshow, is one of the things that I appreciate mostly about these is that I think Oregon is the best fishing state in the United States, and yet year after year after year, we send most of our fishermen to Alaska. Arkansas right now is marketing themselves as a fantastic fishing designation.
Arkansas, that's interesting.
And Bass. California. Actually, yeah, bass and blue ribbon brown trout in the northern part of the state, I guess, somewhere up there. Anyway.
Ozarks, probably in the Ozarks.
Yeah, and then certainly that other state to the east starts with an M, named Carson, Montana, that's it. But they have seen the economics, and they have seen the conservation ethic of catch and release, and I think that this bill fits directly in that and can help set Oregon apart.
Okay, great. Thank you, gentlemen. Any luck on the video? It looks like we're... Okay. So why don't we have some other folks come over and testify, and hopefully we can overcome our IT challenges.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd just like to say I also support Senator Prezansky's bill, which you'll be hearing a little later.
Great. Thank you. Okay, we'll have Kurt Melcher from Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife come up. I think you're going to be hearing from Kurt a lot today. Okay, welcome, Kurt. Oh, and Beth, you want to mention we have some testimony from a group that couldn't be here today.
Native Fish Society submitted written comment on all three of the bills, 571, 502, and 545. So that's available in the back of the room, and all the members also have it in front of them.
Okay, thanks, Kurt. Go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today and testify on Senate Bill 502. As mentioned by the earlier speaker, Senate Bill 502 would require the Department of Fish and Wildlife to create some blue ribbon still water fisheries. It prescribes some angling regulations, asks that the Fish and Wildlife Commission designate at least two bodies of water that are accessible by automobile. And as I mentioned, includes some specific angling regulations with regard to the daily bag limits, size limits, gear regulations, as well as hook types that may be used with various gears. The department thinks that this concept of a blue ribbon fishery designation is certainly worthy of discussion. We believe that it would be a good way to showcase some of our outstanding fishing opportunities and contribute heavily to showcasing Oregon as a world-class fishing destination. We also recognize that these types of fisheries are requested by many of our constituents and would help meet those needs. Currently, we do manage for some quality or trophy-type fisheries through, as designated in our trout management or warm water fisheries management plans and adopted by the Fish and Wildlife Commission in basin plans. And we think in order to maximize the potential for this concept that we would not want to prescribe the specific angling regulations in statute, but have the commission be able to designate those. And also, as mentioned earlier, we understand there is a flowing waters blue ribbon bill that's also out there, and the two concepts could easily be...
Maybe floating around. I haven't seen it.
Floating somewhere, anyway. That's what I've heard. I have not seen it either myself, Madam Chair. We do recognize this bill also directs the commission to establish the fees associated with the blue ribbon concept. And so with regard to revenue generated, we certainly believe revenue would be generated by this program, but not knowing what the specific fees would be, it's difficult for us to at this time say what kind of revenue we'd expect. Additionally, which water bodies were designated would also largely drive how much revenue we thought would be generated by this program. And lastly, we do know there are many anglers out there that as you heard testimony, that prefer diverse opportunities. Some anglers may drop out of given fisheries if they're designated as trophy management areas, and it certainly would attract some additional fishers as well. And my last point was we do, as part of our last budget, we did develop a 25-year angling plan, and this concept and the designation of these water bodies would fit nicely within that plan. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions for the department? Actually, don't leave yet because the chair has a couple of questions for you, which is regarding the funding. I mean, have you, or the increased fee for these blue, you know, ribbon fisheries, and I, you know, certainly appreciate your concern about looking at are you going to lose some people if you're increasing the fee. Have you done any surveys of anglers asking, you know, is this something that they would support if they got, I mean, obviously they have to feel like they're getting something in return if we're asking them to pay higher fees for their experience. And so I was curious in, you guys do a lot of work with stakeholder groups, if you've done any surveys or gotten any feedback from any of the groups that you work with.
Yeah. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, we have done an angler preference survey, and certainly there are anglers out there that prefer trophy opportunity as opposed to the larger scale consumptive type fisheries. We have not done any surveying specifically relative to this concept of charging additional fees for certain water bodies. We did, as a matter of course, in just developing our 2011 budget document, we did actually have a lot of internal discussions on creating a blue ribbon fisheries concept. And most of our internal discussions were focused on non-residents. So residents would automatically have the validation, if you will, and non-residents would have to pay the additional fee, which I think is similar to what goes on in some, at least I believe in Canada. So we did talk about it internally. We did not move it forward at this time, just simply because we have a very full and complex budget discussion, and that one we didn't feel was ripe.
Okay. I think it would be helpful if, Kurt, if you could email to Beth what other states are doing, you know, not every single state, but maybe a sampling of states, especially in the West, if they have similar programs and how they charge their fees. Do they have a breakdown for resident versus non-residents? Not fish, but people. And then also would be helpful for us to just get your thoughts on if there was going to be some water bodies that were nominated, you know, what you would recommend. I think that would be helpful for the committee, unless you want to try to answer. Obviously, the first one, you probably don't have all that information.
Yeah, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, I believe in our internal discussions, we did look at the other states, what are they doing, and I, off the top of my head, I don't recall that there was any that were actually charging additional fees for blue ribbon, at least at least amongst our neighboring states. I believe it does occur in British Columbia, and we can certainly and will certainly follow up with that information to your administrator. With regard to designating the water bodies, I think that would be if the bill moves forward and the commission is directed to do that, that would happen through a broad public discussion, and we would hear from many of the folks, like we heard and from the earlier comments from the Diamond Lake Lodge owner, some water bodies, the constituent groups may favor or prefer designation, others may not. But at this juncture, I wouldn't offer any as potential alternatives.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your candidness and your input, and we will, I'm sure, be following up with your agency on this.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Did nobody have any questions? So the last two people signed up is Tom Wolfe and Joe Rohrlater. And then maybe we'll see if we have success. If not, we could always go to the next bill and come back. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Rohrlater. I live in Walport, Oregon. I'm here today representing Oregon Guides and Packers, Mackenzie River Guides Association, and Desert Springs Trout Farm. I've fished in Canada in these blue ribbon areas, and I have I have personal experience with this. Generally, we pay $10 or $15 a day extra per person to be able to fish on those places. It's a wonderful experience. The money goes back to the province for enhancement. In terms of my guides association, see this bill as a marketing opportunity. When I look in the regulations for states where I want to go fish, one of the things I look at for, first of all, are trophy opportunities, especially places where I might be able to catch a big fish or an unusual fish. And so I think this would be a good marketing association for our guides association. As I said before, I also represent Desert Springs Trout Farm. We grow a hybrid rainbow trout that looks an awful lot like a red band trout. They grow very fast in our hatchery. We sell them all over the West. We are currently marketing under the name of the Alpers trout, which is a pretty famous, nice-looking, very proportional trout that fights very hard. We stock them in private lakes where the folks charge several hundred dollars a day for access, for fly fishing, for catch and release on our fish. The state of California also has a program where private parties can have a concession, and they stock the lake, and then they charge folks to come in and fish in those lakes. So there are a number of business plans that work on this kind of model, and as I said, both my association and my guides association and the Desert Springs Trout Farm would support this bill. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Hey, Tom.
Chair Dingfelder, committee members, I have been hoping for a bill like this for 18 years, so it's glad to see that I've been pushing my organization, organizations like Native Fish Society and Federation of Fly Fishermen, pushing for.
You have to state your name and organization.
Oh, sorry. I've been waiting 18
you're
years
so
for
so excited.
This. My name is Tom Wolfe. I'm the chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, and this is the fifth time I've testified today, so I'm a little groggy, but I just want to appreciate this bill. Like I said, my organization supports it for several different reasons. And as far as Blue Ribbon, and Kurt Melcher was correct, as far as I know, and I've fished in approximately 47 of the 50 states in the United States, Blue Ribbon does not usually in other states constitute extra fundings, extra costs. So I think that you could take this concept of Blue Ribbon, which is a good concept, and not charge extra. And I think designating certain rivers, or not rivers, but lakes as Blue Ribbon, and limiting either artificial only or circle hooks would be a good idea. And I think that would provide the quality you need without causing concern to people for extra costs. So I think that's great. Also, it is a marketing issue, as Joe was talking about in the year 2000, March 2002, of Fisheries Magazine, which is the magazine for American Fisheries Society, which I belong to. They did a survey of all 50 states looking at which states have the most fishermen that go to other states, which states have the fishermen that most come from other states to their state. Oregon finished 45th as far as the amount of people from other states that visit Oregon. Florida finished first. So it's just part of the reason is we don't do a very good job of marketing fishing here in Oregon, because as it was stated earlier, we do have fantastic opportunities for fishing in Oregon. We have salmon, we have sturgeon, we have great steelhead fishing, we have some of the best trout fishing opportunities in the country. We have smallmouth bass in the John Day. It's a great state for fishing, but it's not something that we do a very good job of marketing. And I have nothing against attracting anglers from other states to come in and fish, spend money in our state, and then leave. So I think that's we need to do a better job of marketing. And I think if we create a blue ribbon opportunity designation, that will be great for attracting those people. We'll also give people that really want to catch high quality fish, because in a fisherman there's five different levels. There's I want to catch a fish, I want to catch lots of fish, I want to catch a big fish, I want to catch lots of big fish, and then I want to catch lots of big fish in a difficult situation. And we need to provide opportunities for the people that want to catch the big fish in a high-quality situation, and giving everybody a chance to do that, not just limiting to that, because hopefully within the evolution of everybody that fishes, they reach that big fish in difficult situations. So this is a great thing. Now, I do have just a couple concerns about the language of the bill. If you look at on Section 3, D and E, it says require that individual anglers in blue ribbon fisheries use only single point and barbless artificial lures and flies, and then it says requiring that individual angling with bait in blue ribbon. So that language needs to be cleaned up. It says one line it says you can't use bait, and then the next line it says you can use bait with. So I have no problem with using circle hooks. Now, the only thing you have to be concerned about using circle hooks is it has to be something that has to be pole-sized, and it has to be something of great amount of education, because a lot of the bait fishermen in Oregon or across the country, even though it does have a low mortality, don't use circle hooks. It's not a well-used type of, but as it was stated by Senator Morris, it does have a low mortality, and I'm not opposed to it. I'm just saying you have to be careful when you market that. Not charging any money for use of that, clearing that language out, and also within the line of Section 3, line F, it says providing for stocking blue ribbon stillwater fisheries with appropriate types and sizes of sports fish. Exactly what does that word appropriate mean? I mean, we need to make sure that whenever we do this, that we follow within the guideline of the ODFW wild fish management policy and ESA standards. I mean, I'm not opposed, and we also need to be careful about if we're going to stock fish in lakes of, you know, if it's a reservoir that non-native fish could possibly have an impact on the river above and below. We need to be careful. So, again, those are just minor things, but this is a great concept. It's a concept that we need to move forward on, and I just think that its time has come, and I understand ODFW's reluctance to go to this, but it's a great marketing thing both for fishermen in Oregon and fishermen throughout the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Any questions for these gentlemen? Thanks for your input on that. Does it look like we have success with our video here?
I believe that this committee needs to have a field trip, Madam Chair.
Well, I have a feeling that the Fishing Caucus would be happy to lead us on a field trip. Of course, we can't go with any guides, so the Fishing Caucus would have to be our guide.
I'm not registered yet.
So, actually, Fred Vanetta also signed up. So, Fred, why don't you come up and quickly give your testimony, and we'll end with this wonderful video presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Fred Venata, representing the Oregon Anglers, which is a political action committee devoted to sports fishing enhancing sports fishing opportunities. I will be very brief. We're supportive, very supportive of the concept, and if we'd have been smart enough to have figured it out last session, it would have been incorporated in the 25-year plan bill that Senator Metzger sponsored through the session. The concerns, we have some concerns with the specificity in here, and we would feel much better if the sites were chosen and the regulations and the nature of fish be chosen by an administrative process that the agency, and I've dealt with a lot of agencies in my life, ODF&W goes out and listens to people. They don't always do what we want, but there's an awful lot of input into the process. And I'm confident that many of the issues that arise here could be dealt with in their rulemaking process. Two other things quickly. One on circle hooks. I am a member of the Oregon Fishing Club, which is a private club that leases lakes around and also in some cases access to public private access to public waters. In the lakes that the fishing club manages for trout, we have a rule that circle hooks you use either flies or circle hooks and for trout, and so we're accustomed to the use of circle hooks, and we also use circle hooks sometimes in sturgeon and halibut fishing, but not necessarily for the same reasons that you use them here. So I'm not troubled by the circle hook concept at all. And you mentioned the advertising of Blue Ribbon waters. I have been to Arkansas to fish for trout, and it was in part on a five-day trip to the Midwest. We spent 3 days traveling to Arkansas to fish the White River, which is a world-class trout fishery. It makes a difference, and I think this concept would greatly enhance the fishery here. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Brunetta. Any questions, Fred? Okay. Ready to go?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure that we yet got it up. So, but I would like to make a comment specifically about the bill.
Mm-hmm.
In drafting the bill, there was never an expectation that the specificity of the bill would move forward. What I intended to do was to set the stage and in terms of what it is that we want to accomplish, and then come back and let's talk about the broad policy issues that focus on blue ribbon experiences, and then create the policy direction for ODF&W to by rule then implement. So, Madam Chair, that's what I would like to do, is to come back with those amendments,
mm-hmm.
working out with ODF&W and the interest groups.
Great.
And my colleagues, language that casts it in the direction that we would like to go, but yet reserves to ODF&W the opportunity or responsibility to implement it.
That's great. I've already assigned him to help out.
Yeah, and actually, Madam Chair, colleagues, I'm embarrassed. Because this PowerPoint was meant to set the stage for the discussion, and
it can be the closer now. It's fine.
Okay, it's the closer. But you know, very simply, what do kids, dads, moms, grandpas, grandmas like to catch? Well, we like to catch fish. Now that's my grandson. He's 4 years old. He's at the fly tying bench, and he has created a fly that he will take out and fish. Now, that's not a pretty fly, but they don't have to be pretty to catch fish.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, though.
And what you see is the experience of children. and the bonding that goes on between grandpas and their grandsons and granddaughters. I'd love to have a granddaughter. I've got six grandsons. But we have wonderful family experiences. And you can just see the expression of these kids, the excitement of catching a fish. I'm going to move on, Ed. Okay, we may just have to... Okay. And just keep moving. We're going to bore you with fish pictures, but
look at that kid.
Oh yeah, there we go. There's Perry.
I was like, you're going to make us hungry.
But see, you notice he's not saying where it's at. We had this discussion at a caucus meeting, and he refused to say where it was at.
But the next question is: once these children they catch their first fish, then it's honest to goodness, it's Grandpa, I'm going to get a big one, and it's that whole mentality of looking at big fish. Again, my grandson, with you don't see any frowns on their faces. They're happy. Well, you know, grandpas even have that quest too.
I was going to say, that looks like British
fish.
Columbia.
I think that
British Columbia.
Go before the
we're
Ethics Commission.
Yeah. what was this in British Columbia, I'm guessing, or up in Alaska?
Well, the one picture was in Chile.
Okay.
That's Chile, and then that is in British Columbia. That's in British Columbia. And at British Columbia.
They had to get in there.
And even grandma.
I didn't see staff up there.
Even grandma's. my wife is an avid fly fisher lady. And there's just joy in being in the outdoors. And if you have the experience of catching bigger fish, just keep it going, Ed. We don't want to bore these folks. Okay, looks like we've gone through it. So that's just a sampling of the kind of passion that is generated by an experience with families in the outdoors and the opportunity for really a quality experience. So, Madam Chair, colleagues, I would hope that we can move this along and have kind of a new direction, a new paradigm that we add to Oregon's assets that we can offer to our own residents as well as non-residents. So I really appreciate your indulging our complication here and the ability to share this passion.
It's okay. It only took three of our media people to make it work, so we're sufficiency in government. So thank you, Senator. Don't leave yet, because I think the next bill is up is yours as well. But I wanted to thank the co-sponsors for bringing this forward. I appreciate your suggestion about working with the advocates of this bill, also with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and my co-chair and my committee staff. And we'll look forward to having those amendments back here hopefully soon and in front of the committee. So any other closing remarks before we close the public hearing on this? Okay, great. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 502. We will open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 545, which is also co-sponsored by the members of the Fishing Caucus. And Beth is going to give a brief overview, and then Senator Morse and Senator Atkinson, I think, are going to speak.
Senate Bill 545 directs the State Department of Fish and Wildlife to undertake a study of pathogens in fish hatcheries, requires the study look at the impact on Oregon's waters as a result of releasing hatchery fish that carry pathogens, and the release of fish from hatcheries that utilize parasite F. Requires that OFW use the study to develop a plan to propagate pathogen-free hatchery fish. Excuse me.
Great. Thank you. Senator?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Frank Morse, State Senator. The reason or the occasion for introducing this bill is to bring back a focus and a discussion that had been ongoing but had languished, particularly with respect to how do we improve the hatchery programs of Oregon? And it has to do with Desert Springs. Desert Springs is one of the most unique places on Earth in that the amount of fresh water, the temperatures that accelerate growth rates in fish, and is an asset that could become part of the ODF&W system of assets and hatcheries. I would like to have the opportunity to focus that discussion and think of the ways that we can creatively within this assembly look at how do we improve our hatchery operations. And so, Madam Chair, that's my focus. Those members, and there are people that will testify that have the technical background, but my focus in bringing this forward is to renew those discussions as to how do we improve the hatchery programs of Oregon. So,
great.
Thank you.
Senator Atkinson?
Thank you. Colleagues, for the record, Jason Atkinson from Southern Oregon. Last night, I hosted this dinner. It was fantastic. I called it.
You didn't invite us.
I know. Sorry. it was an outreach of the Fish Caucus. But I hosted a dinner that I'm calling a Legends Dinner. And at this dinner, we had two legends in the fishing world, one of which I'm sure all of you know because he's introduced himself back to the building this last session, or this session, named Walt McGovern. Walt was the guy in 1973 who, with Tom McCall, had an initiative that made the steelhead a sport fish. And also at the dinner was Joe Rolater, with over 25 years around this building on various conservation issues. And then lastly, we had Frank Armato there, who's very well known in certain circles. We had a very lengthy discussion about fish food and about fish disease. Now, that might not sound exciting to you, but actually, those are two of the largest topics that we face when we talk about fish restoration, conservation, rivers, etc. Last week, you were kind enough to hear my hatchbox/incubator bill. The incubator is one of the things that works so well about them. Not only do you get kids involved and you have all of the reproduction and you actually have the genetic science of having the correct fish in the correct streams at the correct time, but also you have zero disease. I don't know if you recall that from the testimony, but in the incubator boxes you have zero disease. Well, we know that in the current hatcheries that have largely fallen at the very end of budgeting around this building, we have some certain disease risk that is a big issue. The New Zealand, I think it was the New Zealand garter snail, was an issue that faced wiping out several strands of fish here in Oregon. Last decade, it was whirling disease. Whirling disease was going to end trout fishing, which would also end steelheading as we know it. And those were real issues that happened. One of the things you look at hatcheries is hatcheries grow fish the same, largely in a similar manner to how they've grown fish since the first dams were put in the 1930s, meaning concrete runways with no structure, no rocks, no shade underneath them. Are in them, and their pellets are fed at these fish. Well, in the wild, there's not a lot of pellets that hatch and fall from the sky. In fact, we know that one of the reasons I'm so big on incubator boxes is it's all natural. Human hands don't touch it. Well, we do know that there is certain amounts of disease that we certainly would like to have a handle on, and that's where this bill's coming from, and I would heartily endorse getting it done.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Okay, so Kurt Melcher from Department of Fish and Wildlife again. Kurt, it's your lucky day. You get to be here for all these bills.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, and I appreciate my lucky nature here today. So, again, for the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you on Senate Bill 545. Senate Bill 545 would require that the Department of Fish and Wildlife study the impact of pathogens that exist in our fish hatcheries, the impact of the release of hatchery fish that carry pathogens, and the impact of parasite F on the waters of the state. Based on the study, Senate Bill 545 requires the department to develop a plan to propagate pathogen-free fish and report to the 76th Legislative Assembly.
Just as a matter of background, the department does have statutory responsibility for fish health status under a series of revised statutes, and the commission has adopted a fish health management policy in administrative rule and also a fish hatchery management policy in administrative rule. These policies describe the measures to minimize impact of disease on our fish resources. We have a professional fish health staff associated with our propagation programs that do excellent work in monitoring the status of our hatchery product and do track the disease occurrences there regularly. Just for instance, in 2008, our staff conducted, in all told, about 3,000 examinations at our facilities for a variety of disease. You've heard of whirling disease mentioned here, which we do not have in Oregon, as well as other viruses that we sampled for, as well as our routine pathogen sampling. And our fish health services and program is highly regarded in the fishery science world. In fact, just recently received a recognition at the American Fishery Society Oregon chapter for their work in containing and managing disease at our hatcheries. And just a few additional comments there. We've, over the past several decades, some of the disease risk that we take on at our hatcheries is a result of we use surface water at many of these facilities, mm-hmm. and in order to be more friendly towards natural production and provide habitat for naturally produced fish, we do now allow naturally produced fish to travel above our hatcheries, whereas the previous practice through many decades, in fact probably the better part of a century, was to install a weir and not allow any fish above the hatchery. We do now, in order to increase the habitat that's available for the natural production, we do allow fish above our hatcheries, which, and as a result of that, we do accept some additional disease risk with that action. The bill would request or require us to develop a study of pathogens in our fish hatcheries. We're already doing that, and we do, in fact, conduct weekly, monthly, and quarterly reports on our disease at our facilities. In order to look at the effects of these fish that are released in the natural environment, we would have to do some additional sampling. We do sample some wild fish populations currently. In order to really address that issue, we'd have to sample some more in both systems with hatchery fish and hatchery fish releases and in systems without any hatchery production. Additionally, the bill requests information on our use of parasite F in state waters and the effect on state waters. Parasite F is one of a number of trade names for basically a formalin-type compound. We actually don't use parasite F. We use parasite S because that's what's under state contract for purchasing. We use that chemical consistent with the FDA label and under strict regulation, DEQ regulations at our facilities. And there was an environmental assessment done prior to the FDA approval of that compound. And lastly, Senate Bill 545 would request that we develop a plan to propagate disease-free or pathogen-free, hatchery fish. We, as I mentioned earlier, we have several policies in place and administrative rule that help us manage the risk associated with pathogens. The truth of the matter is, particularly with regard to anadromous species, and those would be fish that go to the sea and then return to our facilities to spawn, the charge to produce pathogen-free fish is largely impossible. Many of these fish, the pathogens that they bring back from their ocean life history is carried and transmitted at the egg stage even. Some of those pathogens are, anyway. So I just want to stress the difference between a pathogen-free fish and a disease-free fish. Many fish carry pathogens but don't exhibit disease symptoms. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Kurt, a question I have for you, because what I'm hearing is what sounds to me that some of the things that are requested in this bill you're already doing. and either we don't know about it or it hasn't been communicated. Is there any requirement that the department report back regularly to the legislature on progress on combating, you know, pathogens or what current status is in the in our hatcheries?
Chair Dingfelder, not that I'm aware of, and as I mentioned, we are doing those, and it would not be, we'd be happy to come before this committee and report on what we've done, for instance, in 2008, most recent, you know, the most recent year's activity, or previous years, if you're interested in those as well.
Okay, and then a follow-up, because we have a packet here, and I don't know, I think this came from Senator Morse, is that correct? From Joe. Okay, so Joe's going to talk about this, because it is about, were hatcheries at some point using parasite F?
Chair Dingfelder, some of our facilities, when we've had disease problems, have used parasite S, not F. Although it's functionally it's the same product. So technically, parasite F. Currently, we're not using, but we are using it basically the same product, with a different trade name.
Okay, so it's the same elements.
Yes,
different trade
absolutely.
Name. Okay, well, I'm sure there's going to be some other questions. I actually have some questions for Joe since he handed out this information, but we'll see if there's other questions from the committee members. And maybe we'll keep you up there while Joe comes up. I think that'd be helpful. So last but not least, Joe Berlater.
Chair Dingfelder, member of the committees. My name is Joe Rollator. I'm here today representing Desert Springs Trout Farm. I gave you a handout that's got some information in it, but first I want to take you through the broader overview of the relationship between the fish health in the hatchery and the fish and the effect of hatcheries on the fish that are in the natural environment. And I'm not a fisheries scientist, but I've done a lot of research on this, and I've developed a fairly broad knowledge about it. So there seems to be five ways that hatchery fish interface with naturally spawning fish. The hatchery fish compete for food and space, and they draw predators. They're potentially some genetic alterations when hatchery fish and wild fish intermingle during spawning. There's increased hooking mortality on naturally spawning fish when we have mixed stock fisheries. They concentrate the fishing effort on the fish, and there's some hooking mortality on the native fish. There's also some evidence that the fish in the hatchery spread diseases to the wild fish. And additionally, there's the physical influence of the hatchery operation itself. Now, the first three of those have been studied quite a bit, but the last two, we really don't have very much information about the broader picture of how that hatchery fish that may be a carrier or it may be infected with a disease in the hatchery interacts with the wild fish, and whether the wild fish get that or not, get diseases or not from the hatchery fish, and then also just the physical influence of the operation in the hatchery. I'll give you there's a disease called, well, we call it IHN, and I think it's infectious hemoglobic neurosis virus or something like that. It's a fairly common fish disease. It wasn't prevalent. It was not present in Oregon until the 50s. It was discovered in some hatcheries. It's fairly prevalent now. And about 10 years ago, there was a big outbreak of IHN in the Leeburg trout hatchery. And Leeburg has a native fish run of trout. And when I was a little boy, we fished on those trout all the time. After the big outbreak of IHN at Leeburg hatchery, we noticed that the big naturally spawning red side kind of looking trout are pretty much not there anymore. And so we think that there might be an indication that the disease in the hatchery and the proliferation of the disease in the hatchery has had some effect on wild fish. I've talked to fisheries scientists. Dr. Doug DeHart used to be the director of fisheries at ODFW, and I asked him about this. And he said, we know that there's some effect of the disease amplification in the hatchery and the effect that it has on wild fish, but we don't know how to study it. I think Kurt alluded to that earlier. He said we'd have to do some sampling, but I believe that we really need to look at the potential effects of the hatcheries and the hatchery operation on wild fish.
I'm going to interrupt for a minute because we have Commissioner Susan Morgan here, and she well knows because she helped fund the hatchery that is doing a lot of research on wild fish. And so I wanted to see if you are including looking at, you know, the impact of some of these chemicals on wild fish population as part of those studies.
Chair Dingfeld, members of the committee, I'm not aware that that's the case, but I have to confess I don't have every project. I'm working on many projects. I have many graduate students there, and I'm happy to come back to the committee and report on all the topics they are working on.
Okay.
I don't have them all committed to memory.
Okay. I appreciate that. So go ahead, Joe, if you can wrap up, because we do have another bill that you want to testify on as well.
The whole issue of hatchery operations is also the fish are treated with antibiotics. They're treated with chemicals. Those chemicals go out into the river. We know that low-level antibiotics have an effect on us. They must have an effect in the aquatic system. We know that I've given you a handout of formalin, and there are two things. There's the formalin label, which I took off of a barrel at the Elk Creek Fish Hatchery year before last. And there's also a study from University of Florida about some of the possible effects of formalin on people and on fish and on the environment. And I think we need to study those things. Incidentally, I go to all the hatchery research committee meetings. I'm not on the committee, but I go, and I've learned an awful lot. Even though I didn't support that hatchery, I learned an awful lot about these things. And some of the issues that I've become very concerned about with spread of diseases and the relationship between what goes on in the hatchery and what goes on in the wild are things that I've learned at the Hatchery Review Committee. And I think we're all starting to think about expanding this view of, you know, we've all done a lot of work over a lot of years on the habitat, and we don't see a lot more fish to catch. So my gut feeling is that something else is going on, and I'd like to know what that is.
Thank you.
Any
questions for Joe? Comments? All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Anybody else like to testify on Senate Bill 545 before we close this public hearing? Okay. So since Senator Atkinson, this is your bill, I'm going to have you get together with the proponents and ODFMW and also with the advocates. And
charge forward. Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
So we'll be looking forward to hearing back on that one. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 545. And our last bill of the day is Senate Bill 571. And actually, Beth, why don't you do an introduction, and then since it's Senator Przanski had introduced the bill on behalf of somebody else, if you want to say a few words as well.
Okay.
Establishes that releasing or attempting to release any live fish that was not taken from that body of water without a permit is a Class C felony.
Okay. Senator Przanski.
Thank you. Commissioner Susan Morgan, former state representative, came to me or asked me if I would be willing to shepherd through a bill that she had actually had filed for pre-session drafting, and I told her I'd be flattered and honored to do so. And it does really address an issue that's statewide, but also specifically when you look at Diamond Lake as to what happened and the requirements of cleaning up that lake and getting it back to the point of where it wasn't being overran. I think it was important for us to move this forward. So it's my pleasure to ask Commissioner Morgan to come up and give her perspective on the bill. I know there's a number of people that have come in support.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Susan. Come on up. I know how much you miss us and wish you were here sharing in everything that's going on here in the building. Welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. For the record, my name is Susan Morgan, and I'm County Commissioner down in Douglas County. And I want to thank you, Chair Dingfelder, for the opportunity to come and testify on this bill. And I also want to thank Senator Prozonsky for sponsoring the bill for me. I want to talk to you. Oh, I also want to thank the ODFW Fish Division and the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife folks for their help in the drafting of the bill also. And I want to talk to you today about why Senate Bill 571 was drafted. I want to take your mind that the pictures that Senator Morse put up were quite serendipitously a great thing for this bill also, because I think that some of those pictures did show you what Diamond Lake was like. It's a small and beautiful lake high in the Cascades. It's actually in Senator Prozonsky's legislative district up in the eastern part of Douglas County, and it's a world-famous trout fishery. Generations of Oregon families have learned and passed on to each other an appreciation for fishing and camping and an understanding of the relationship between people and the natural world at Diamond Lake. Twice during the history of the lake, once in the 1950s and again in the 1980s, the ecology of the lake was destroyed by introduction of live bait fish. In the 1950s, ODFW led an effort to restore the ecology of the lake and restore the family-friendly trout fishery that the lake was famous for. The prohibition that we have right now on our books against using live bait fish originated from that first restoration of Diamond Lake. The live bait was found to be the cause of the problems that the lake had back then, and it was again a tui chub infestation that destroyed the ecology of the lake. So fast forward to the 1990s and the latest infestation of tui chub and the effort to deal with the problems that the bait fish caused the lake. The lake is actually a fabulous tui chub incubator, and they grow fast and furiously. What they do is upset the balance of the phytoplankton that are in the lake. They eat a bunch of the ones that they like the best, and that allows an algae to take over to the lake. When the algae blooms, it releases a toxin that's actually deadly to people and animals. And so the lake went through a number of years where it had to be closed in the summer because of the toxic algae bloom. So again, there was a process put in place that resulted in the lake being restored. That process, because of all of the complicating layers of laws that need to be worked through, actually took 6 years to be able to find a path through the layers of law and to build a wall of data that would withstand all the court challenges that it was anticipated that it would go through. It also cost about $6 million to do it. So there was a huge investment in time and in money to bring the lake back this time. And Diamond Lake is again a jewel in the Cascade Range, and Oregonians are flocking back to the lake. I think that if you went up there, you'd see a lot of the kind of scenes that Senator Morse's slides enacted out every day up there, with families going out on the lake and having a great time fishing. All those pictures that you see in everybody's family albums where they're holding the chain full of fish up in front of all of them, lots of those kinds of pictures are being taken. The campgrounds that the Forest Service has built around the lake are full, and the lodge is full of people. It's really back and very vibrant and very family-oriented. We were all extremely dismayed in the monitoring that's going on post-recovery to find another bait fish in the lake called Golden Shiners, and it's a bait fish that is used a lot in the Northern California lakes. And so it appears that somehow, again, another bait fish has been introduced into the lake. One of the things that frustrated us as we thought about what to do with the latest introduction into the lake was that there really are no good enforcement tools in the toolbox when it comes to dealing with these problems. My understanding is that currently introducing fish illegally is a misdemeanor and there's a low monetary fine associated with it, and that's all. And so we have been attempting to come to a place where we have some bigger tools in the regulatory toolbox that we can use as a deterrent for people doing these kinds of things. And that's what Senate Bill 571 is. It's a bill that was collaboratively put together by the Fish Division at ODFW and the Fish and Game people at Oregon State Police to try to add some clout to dealing with these. And with the tremendous and increasing cost of the investment to recover the resources after these fish are introduced and deal with the side effects of all that, we really do need some kind of way to more effectively deal with trying to recover it and raising the profile on the danger of actually making these bait fish introductions. So with that is why Senate Bill 571 is in front of you today, and I know that there are a number of people that want to testify about the bill, and that you are probably going to get some recommendations or suggestions for amendments to the bill. I want you to know that I am really open to any kind of work that you think is relevant that will make this bill a better bill, but what we're really after here is raising the profile on the downside of bait, live bait fish, and also being able to have some better enforcement tools than we have right now. And again, I thank you for your time, and I would be happy to answer any questions or pass the mic.
Okay, thank you very much, Susan.
Thank
it's
you.
Great to see you. Are there any questions? I think Senator Boquist is not going to let you off that easy.
Of course I'm not. Susan, can you just educate me? I understand. I got the public portion down real quick. What about private ponds? I mean, what do we do in Oregon now? People have private ponds. I heard about trout farms. They're all registered with Fish and Wildlife, or individuals that have private lakes and private ponds on their property?
Well, again, I think that's something that you'll want to discuss as you work the bill, because you certainly want to try to mitigate for the unintended consequences of it. And again, there may be an issue if you're in a situation where you have a pond that dumps out into a river,
right,
or,
yeah,
you know, some kind of thing like that. Yeah. So that's definitely an issue that you'll want to discuss, I would imagine.
We'll invite ODFW up next and ask for their input on that, but we thank you for bringing this forward, and the committee will look forward to working with you.
I can't hear what you're saying.
Said we thank you for bringing this forward, and the committee looks forward to working with you on this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm too short. I can't reach the mic. Okay. So we'll have Kurt back up from ODFW.
He finally got one he likes.
He's neutral.
He's neutral.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. For the record, again, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director, Department of Fish and Wildlife. I do have prepared written testimony here as well, and then I would be happy to address Senator Boquist's question. So we provide these comments. Senate Bill 571 would increase the penalty for illegal transportation of fish from a misdemeanor to a Class C felony, which carries a maximum of 5 years imprisonment and a $125,000 fine, or both. By way of background, the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission does have statutory authority and is responsible for managing the release of live fish into the waters of the state under ORS 498.222. The Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission has adopted administrative rules that provide that anybody convicted of transporting live fish without a fish transport permit may be charged with a misdemeanor, and additionally that person or company who imported fish illegally shall be held liable for any incidental kill of any species due to or during destruction of those illegally imported fish.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Since that's by rule, I was looking at the statute, didn't see it in the statute to see what the penalty is. I understand it's a misdemeanor, it's unclassified. And if so, what or is there a range of what the actual penalties that can be imposed?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Pozanski, I don't know the answer to that question. I'll find that out for you.
A copy of the rule that actually gives that authority.
Sure.
That'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Okay. With increasing regularity, illegal transportation and introduction of fish species has become problematic throughout the state. As you heard here earlier from Commissioner Morgan, Diamond Lake is certainly the most notable, at least in recent years, the most notable occurrence, but it's also certainly not alone. Many resort owners, individual instance cost resort owners and local businesses millions of dollars in revenue, and then cost, as you heard, millions of dollars in terms of restoration efforts.
As taxpayers.
Combination taxpayers,
and,
private, and others.
And anglers.
Yes,
angler
absolutely.
Fees, but it's very costly.
It was. I would add it was in well worth the effort. However, the problem is not just confined to Diamond Lake. And just to note a few, we've had illegal introductions in Davis Lake, Crane Prairie Reservoir, Antelope Flat Reservoir, all that had at one time had trophy trout fishing opportunities, world-renowned, and those fisheries are essentially now gone. Most of these illegal introductions reduce angling opportunity, can cause harmful environmental impacts, as well as having, as we heard, devastating impacts to both the state and local economy. We believe Senate Bill 571 would go a long way towards deterring people from illegally transporting or introducing fish in Oregon waters. And we did also recommend, I note in the bill, there's some blanks for the number of years for suspending a license. There's no basis for this, but we suggested that you might want to consider 10 years, something that's very meaningful. And I would also note, it's not mentioned in our testimony, but these, because of our interstate compact now on wildlife violators, these suspensions do carry into any other state into which we have reached a compact, and I believe it's about 39. Hmm. It's a large number of states right now. So if Oregon suspends a fishing license or hunting license, that carries into all the states where we have an agreement with the other states.
Thank
you. So specifically to Senator Boquist's mm-hmm. question, we do have a fish transport rule that's required, or excuse me, a fish transport permit that's required under administrative rule. So the private stocking operations, transporting fish to private ponds, are required to have a transport permit, and that's where we do that.
Any questions? I think Senator Boquist has another one.
So follow up. So if mm-hmm. if they had it, just so that I understand, here, Madam Chair, I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
But to the issue you just raised, if someone transported fish and put it in the pond on their property, that would be a Class C felony under this, right? Without your permit.
Chair Dingfelder, or Senator Boquist, that's correct.
Follow-up question, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
You say in your testimony this bill is going to make it a Class C felony for illegal transportation, and I don't see it in the bill. The bill says Section 1D, which is the release, doesn't connect Section 1A. So my assumption is the bill is only proposed to be a Class C felony for release, and it would remain a misdemeanor for transportation. Is that not correct?
So I read the bill.
Senator Dingfelder, Senator Boquist, as I read this on the fly here, I do agree with your interpretation. We'd have to follow up on that, but I think you're correct.
Okay. Any other questions? I have a question for you, Kurt. What is the likelihood, of actually catching somebody that is illegally putting, this introduced species in? And, we find the fish, but it doesn't say where it came,
sure.
obviously. Where it came from. So is that something that you catch people on a regular basis doing? Or
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, I would say that it is a very difficult situation to actually catch someone in the act with these species. I think from our perspective, this is a great deterrent in terms of being able to educate people. We will be able our public outreach with regard to the penalties for such an action will be able to describe some very steep and difficult penalties that I think will have a real deterrent, or at least the hope is that it'll have a real deterrent on folks who might consider doing these things.
Yeah, my follow-up to that is going to be education.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's all about I think there's probably people who don't understand how the impact it has on an ecosystem is my sense. I'm not defending that practice, but, you know, the question is whether it's intentional. I think education is a real key to making sure that we're not back in a very expensive situation again. So any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
We'll definitely be following up with you. And then we have a couple more folks that would like to testify on this. Jim Myron and Tom Wolf, come back up. Jim, why don't you get started?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Jim Myron. I live in Canby, and I'm here representing myself.
What?
I'm retired, sir. I can do that now. For many
We're
years,
glad to see you're using your retirement well.
For many years, I have supported the concept of increased penalties for the illegal release of fish into the waters of the state, and I'm here in support of this bill. We really need to give people a strong message that this is not the right thing to be doing, and a Class C felony certainly would get their attention. And I think that is mentioned on line 14 of the bill, that is the penalty. But maybe that's too strong, maybe not, but we need to find a way to get this bucket brigade to stop running around dumping fish into other lakes. And maybe one other suggestion, I mentioned this to Commissioner Morgan, one of the ways that these fish are transported from lake to lake is in live wells, in boats. Live wells are very necessary and useful during fishing tournaments, when people put their fish into a live well, go in and have them weighed, and then go back and release them. But maybe there's a way to get at this issue through an amendment that would make it illegal to transport fish in a live well, with the exception of fishing contests. That way, if the state police stop somebody on Highway 97 that caught a bunch of walleye and bass up in the Columbia River in the morning, and they're on their way to Century Drive down south of Bend to dump them off, if they're in the live well, that would be a violation. So that would be my suggested amendment to the bill.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Tom?
Madam Chair, Dinkfelder, committee members, my name is Tom Wolf. I'm the state chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, representing the 3,000 members of Trout Unlimited here in the state, and hopefully the 166,000 members of Trout Unlimited across the nation. We're the largest cold water conservation group in the United States, and this bill, the language of this bill has been a dream of many of our members here in the state for a long time, because we're frankly tired of people taking doing what we call bucket biology, deciding that for whatever, however innocent they are, to decide to transport non-native or at least non-native to that basin fish into different water bodies. One of our members, and I don't know, I have no idea if he's true, once counted how many fish, lakes, and rivers have illegal introductions of non-native fish in them, and he came up with 222.
Just in Oregon.
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, Obviously, some of the big ones is we were talking about Blue Ribbon lakes recently, and 15 years ago, Davis Lake and Crane Prairie Lake would have easily met those criteria. They provided 5 to 10 pound fish. People came out to fish them, and then some people decided that they needed to have bass and bluegill and other species in some of those lakes, and now we no longer have that tremendous fisheries in those lakes. We've decimated those lakes, and now they don't get the attention. The economy has suffered, and we're not drawing in fishermen. So it can also have an economic benefit or defect. So we do heartily support this bill. As far as the number of years that your license should be suspended, I think 10 is probably a little too long. I would support 3, and think that would be, and I absolutely support
the jail time and the penalties. And I particularly like that the commission may sue for restitution. I think that's important. I think people need to, depending on how intentional their act is, they need to be responsible for their actions, because as demonstrated with the Diamond Lake incident, these illegal introductions cost taxpayers millions of dollars. And you look at Yellowstone Lake right now, because someone intentionally introduced lake trout in there 20 years ago, the largest intact ecosystem in the lower 48 is being threatened because bears can no longer come out of hibernation and eat Yellowstone cutthroat trout. Brown pelicans can no longer eat, and we're seeing a devastation of that ecosystem. And it's not as bad here in Oregon, but it can devastate the ecology of a stream or lake if a non-native fish is put in there. So definitely this bill is great. It should go forward, and Trout Unlimited supports it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions, Senator Pezzanti?
This is a statement. My reading of the current law under 498.222, sub 1A about the transport, I think the live wells are already covered in there.
Is it?
Yeah, because the way it says is transport any live fish unless the person is first gets the permit. And so it doesn't say what mechanism you're actually transporting. It's just the act of transporting it. So if they're transporting a live well, I think, based on my reading, they would be subject to the misdemeanor now.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. That saves an amendment to the bill.
Thank you, Senator, from that judicial perspective. Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. Would both of you support an amendment that would, we keep bouncing around between the idea of enforcement, which is hard to enforce, versus educating people that this is something we don't do. Would you both support an amendment to require the department to talk about this in the synopsis or at places where fishing licenses are sold?
For the record, Jim Myron, I would certainly support education as part of this bill in any manner that you want to put it in there. Education is going to be the way that this will eventually change. You can pass a law, but if you can't catch the people doing it, you're not going to change behavior without a good education campaign. So.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Atkinson, I would also support this. I think that education is very important because a lot of the people that do this unintentionally without really realizing the consequences. The reason I support the severe penalties is there are a small group of people that know the consequences, and those people need to be sent a message. But yes, I think education, whether in the synopsis or regulations, would be very important.
Okay, Senator Pezzanti, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, the only comment I want to make is I agree with that we do want to educate, but I want to make certain that we do it in a similar way that Senator Atkinson said, something that's not going to be a cost, that's going to be unburdened, because with this economy, that could be the thing that would torpedo the bill if it has too much of a cost. So it would seem, though, that you could put a paragraph or two within the annual regs that would definitely get the word out, bold printed or whatever, to make certain people, when they get their license, have the books, and they actually would know that.
Can we comment?
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely right. And one of the problems we face with our reg book is being demonstrated by the deputy director, Mr. Melcher, who's frantically trying to look through the reg book now and can't find it, which one of the problems with our reg books is you can hardly read the silly thing. It's very hard to read. It's very hard to figure out, and
I understand.
It's a little tricky. So I would actually advertise it, or
maybe we need a video.
Actually,
that
more than a paragraph, but maybe something like an ad that says, "If you do this, you're not going to fish in 39 states for the next 10 years." You know, I mean, something nice and happy like that.
Great. All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for this comment, and thank you for your suggestions. We have two more folks that would like to testify, Fred Panetta and Joe Rolater. And then anybody else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 571 that can come up to the podium. Okay. Why don't you go ahead, Fred?
Age takes preference.
Thank you.
I don't get to say that very often to people anymore.
Thank you.
I'm Fred Bonata, appearing before you on behalf of Oregon Anglers. Short answer, we're very supportive of Senate Bill 571. We spent last session and much of the interim and find ourselves in somewhat of a dilemma with a bill that we have drafted for the House that we call a poaching bill. It has this provision in it. And the concept in our poaching bill was to get the, we'd use an $8 word, to get the egregious case and separate that from the minor case and provide significant civil penalties. Take their car, their boat, their gun, their fishing rod, and their license. Maybe that we could get the district attorneys to do that rather than go through a criminal process. We worked with ODF&W legal staff. We have worked with legislative counsel. The bill we've got, which has been introduced but not printed yet, doesn't quite get us there, and we see some, you know, of the same problems here with determining the difference between the person that brings in the aggressive invasive species, maybe as live bait, and the dad who the goldfish is outgrowing the jar, and nobody wants to kill the goldfish, so they take it and put it in some water somewhere. Those pokes need to be treated differently. I think you're very fortunate because you have somebody who is very familiar with the district attorney's office and prosecution and is a very competent legal counsel. Maybe you can get that worked out here, and if you do, we will take this provision out of our bill in the House and steal some of the concepts of it and apply it to the other poaching thing. You know, we're trying to differentiate between the guy who has 97 sturgeon on his boat in the Columbia, or the crab fisherman who came over from Idaho and caught 500 crab out of Yaquina Bay. You know, we think they ought to be treated differently than a guy with a fish that's an inch too long or too short, and has 13 crab in his box. And figuring out the system to do that with the aid of the lawyers, we haven't been able to get there yet. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe?
Chairman Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator. I live in Walport, Oregon. I represent Oregon Guides and Packers, McKinsey River Guides Association, Curry Guides, and Desert Springs Trout Farm. And my clients very much support this. I can go over this in detail later, but I think the biggest part of this bill that is the restitution, because what Fred was just talking about the scope of damage, you know, is a goldfish in an enclosed pond has a whole different restitution requirement than Tule Chubbs in Lamola Lake. So I think that's a real key to make this work, and so we really support the bill.
Great. Any questions for this gentleman?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. And with that, I think the proponents of this bill are going to get together and work on. We've heard a lot of suggestions here, so I know that there's some good ideas, and we'll look forward to seeing some amendments when this comes back. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 571. Committee members, we have a full day on Thursday. We are moving on to exotic pets.
No.
So we'll look forward to, just want to alert you that we may end up running a little bit over, but hopefully we won't. But we've got
a lot shorter. I've only got two emails on exotic
pets. So we have a hearing on exotic pets and PBDEs.
Pitfall.
So with that, are there any other questions, staff?
I think that's everything.
Okay. And with that, we'll close the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources.
Mr. Meyer.